I'm speaking today with Rogene G. Calvert, who is candidate for at-large number 3 city council. Rogene, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Charles, I'm running because I was born and raised in Houston. I've seen it change and I've seen it grow tremendously. And I feel that I can bring to city council the kind of leadership we're going to need with this kind of growth and this kind of diversity that the city has. I'm a collaborative, consensus building, very open, and I've worked across all kinds of groups of people all my life. And I feel that that's the kind of leadership we're going to need at city council. City council is a legislative body. And just as Congress, just as the state legislature, we need leadership that will bring people together and will listen to all people. And that's what I would want to do. I bring experience to the position that I think will be very important. One is that I have been in nonprofit for over 30 years. And while I served in the nonprofit field, I've had the experience to see the needs of the city, see the needs of people in the city. And it ranges in different kinds of areas, education, healthcare, mental health, senior citizens, youth, child abuse. Child abuse prevention is where I really cut my teeth many, many years ago. So the 30 years plus of nonprofit work I've done really taught me what the needs of the city and the people in the city have. I spent 10 years in city government, directly in City Hall with the council offices. I've worked with Gordon Kwan for 4 years as a at-large council member, and I know, you know, how city functions, how city government functions. 6 years with Mayor Bill White, so I know how the mayor's office functions and how the two function together. I learned a lot there. And then I've spent many years in business. Grew up in my family business and my neighbor's business, working in a small grocery store, and also as the head of the Asian Chamber of Commerce. So I've seen recently how local business and international business also play in the city. So again, in total, I bring experience in civic, community, government, and in business that I think will be very valuable as a council member. So all of that together, I felt like this is a good time for me to serve the city and pay back all the great things that I've gotten from it.
I mean, the city, while the city provides a lot of services, it also partners oftentimes with businesses, with nonprofits and other entities to do things that maybe it can't do on its own, or perhaps where it's better to leverage the experience of something else. Have you any direct experience with that? And where do you see opportunities for that that the city maybe isn't leveraging or isn't doing enough of?
I think it's a good point. I have done a lot of partnerships, private-public partnerships in work that I've done. But I think that that's a value that I can bring, or a strength. I think the city could collaborate more and cooperate more, certainly within itself, departments that could communicate better maybe, and really look at where there might be some redundancy, that we could save money in efficiency, but even more importantly, across institutions, so city, county. Now, I know we've looked over the years at mergers. I don't know if that's important, but certainly looking at ways we could jointly fund something, we could do co-location of services, libraries, health clinics we've looked at, other kinds of crime prevention and safety that we could look at, maybe jointly funding together. Metro and the city, maybe some of the transportation things we've done. But I think safety and security, some of the things we do together, where can we jointly fund that or co-locate things? I think the average person doesn't know if it's a city facility or service or a county. and they just want good service. And I can see where we could maybe share some of the things we're doing together and serving the you know, the population.
Okay. What's your impression of the city's finances at this point? You know, a couple of years ago we had, when the economy was at its worst, you know, the city budget was in a big deficit situation. Mayor Parker had to cut a bunch of services. Yeah. Well, you know, the economy is better, finances are better, services have been restored, but there's some concerns about long-term finances. So what's your opinion at this point of the city's financial picture, and what's your view of, you know, the budget that the city is currently operating under?
You know, I think the budget has always been pretty tight and pretty responsible, but now we're seeing revenues picking up. I think the state reported a 9% increase in revenues. Probably the city will be comparable. If that's true, and I believe it is, we need to look at how do we put to work in good times. You know, how do we kind of put away the nuts, as they say, store, or take care of areas where we wouldn't have been able, or that we had to cut 2 years ago when things were bad. How can we kind of restore that? And I think the mayor is restoring some of that now in this new 2014 budget. But I would like to see, how do we put away for the future in good days, now that we see some good times? And pension, of course, is one of the areas that is a drain. We're going to have to see where we can do some, maybe a little reform where we can, but in a gradual way where we're not hurting or cutting people and directly, but we can start to maybe make some changes. We need to look at the growth of the city. So we're expecting 1 million people to move into Houston in the next 20 years. With that comes revenue. With that comes maybe increasing in sales tax and property tax to some degree, but also using services more. So we're going to have to balance those two things. I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but when they say Houston's number one and we're sitting at the top, the growth is happening, but the outside the city limits is happening at a far larger rate than inside the city. And in fact, we're holding steady or maybe even proportionately decreasing when we look at sales tax and property tax and all of that in the city core. So we have to look at how can we keep the inside of the city limits growing at the same rate that the outside of the city is. I think it's something that we have to look at hard.
Okay. You mentioned pensions, and of course, I guess the main point of contention over pensions has to do with the firefighters. Mayor Parker has been pushing to get a bill passed in the legislature, or even one introduced in the legislature, to grant, meet, and confer privileges to the city in relation to the firefighters'
yeah.
pension. The firefighters argue that that's not needed, and that their pension fund is well funded, and it's all a small portion of the budget anyway. Do you support the efforts by Mayor Parker to have a bill passed in the legislature to grant, meet, and confer privileges to the city?
I believe and I agree that all three pensions should be controlled locally. Yeah. Why that was taken to Austin way back when, you know, that's, I'm not sure all of the things behind that. But if it is a local pension, it should be controlled locally. Yeah.
Okay. As you've noted, the city is growing a lot, but, you know, and arguably it's growing a lot in some places. There's a lot of demand in some places and
yeah.
not so much in others. The city has tried to make some adjustments to this by the changes in Chapter 42 to the Development Code, which allow for more density. But as you know, in our famously non-zoning city, we're seeing a lot of places where a developer wants to build something that the neighbors don't want.
Right.
You know, high-rises, the Ashby High-Rise being the canonical example, but there's some in my neighborhood in the Heights, there's others in yep. River Oaks and Memorial and all around the city. You know, I don't think anyone, I mean, Chapter 42 took a long time to be done, but I don't think anyone expected it to be the end. It's an ongoing process. What, if anything, do you see that council could do, the city could do, to, you know, both encourage growth, but allow neighborhoods to have some control without, you know, over what happens in their neighborhood, you know, again, without hampering developers' ability to, you know, build stuff?
Well, Chapter 42 extension of it was, to me, a double-edged sword. I mean, it does allow for more density, as you said, between the Loop and the Beltway. And that's good because it'll encourage some density there in areas where, in order to have walkable communities, what I call walkable communities, which is, I believe, is a good model so that you have things more all self-sufficient within an area. So you don't always have to get in your car, and hopefully there'll be good public transportation to support it. That's good, and you need density in order to support those models. But on the other hand, if you don't have good infrastructure and you don't have those systems to support it, you will have gridlock. You know, you'll have bad parking situations. And so what I would like to see is the city take much more of a proactive role in planning for those kinds of situations. If we're going to have more dense areas, we need to have the systems to correspond with that. And we need to have proactive planning in those areas. So parking, transportation, recreation, we need to have neighborhoods and citizens be able to voice their opinion. So with this new Chapter 42 extension, they did give neighborhoods up to two years to come up with a plan or come up with better, stronger deed restrictions to protect them. I think that was very good. But we also need the tools as citizens and as neighborhood civic clubs and all to be able to depend on the city to protect us with legal help if in fact there is violations or things happening. So I think there was just a recent situation that the developer wanted to build something and the neighborhood didn't necessarily have the tools done. So, you know, we need to depend on help through the city. And I'm hoping that the city will provide that help, because I've been on the neighborhood side and you don't always get that help, you know, that you need. It's complicated, but given the 2 years, hopefully that will give neighborhoods a chance to come up with the kind of changes they need in their deed restrictions to help protect their neighborhood. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but it did create the need for other tools and other safeguards for neighborhoods now that we've opened the door for more increased density.
I want to talk to you a little bit about, you mentioned you've been involved with the Asian Chamber of Commerce. Everyone I talk to on these interviews likes to talk about making Houston, attractive to businesses. And I assume that's what chambers of commerce in some ways are all about. So tell me a little bit about what the Asian Chamber of Commerce does and how an entity like that, because I know there are others. I mean, there's an Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, an African-American one. There's ones associated with neighborhoods like here at the Greater Heights. How do they interact with the city? And, you know, what, if anything, should council be doing to enable them to do what they do?
Well, when I was head of the Asian Chamber, we were trying to help our members and small businesses to be able to operate, you know, and become successful. So regulations, just like any groups, would like to help their businesses navigate whatever the regulations are for them to function. Also to attract businesses. So being able to provide incentives and things that will bring businesses into areas. And I guess the Asian Chamber, the area that they were most interested in was the southwest part of Houston, which was very ripe for development. There, you know, there's a lot of land over there. There's a lot of opportunity to bring businesses in. But what we want to be careful, though, is that we don't over-promise and we don't protect the city in the things that we want to, you know, if we attract businesses in, we want to be sure it's a win-win, both for the businesses and for the city, and that we make sure that we really make it worthwhile for these businesses to come in. And when I say these businesses, so I'm talking about maybe attracting foreign businesses also that would see a value in coming into Houston and investing. So making sure it's good for them as well as it's good for the city.
Okay.
I would say that we would want to see some value for their investment. And as you may know, there are ways to attract foreign investors. They could, visas. There are what we call EB-5. And where the investor might get some advantages putting money into Houston. And so, you know, we want to balance that.
Okay. Talking about regulations, one of the issues that came before council a few months ago that I think is going to come back has to do with food trucks.
Yeah.
As you know, Houston has established a reputation nationally as being a very, very good food city, and food trucks are kind of on the leading edge of that. But they can't operate downtown right now or in the medical center. They've organized to try to push council to change ordinances that would allow them to operate downtown as they do elsewhere. Is that something you would support?
On the surface, I really would, because I think, and I wanted to say this when you asked me about the Asian Chamber, you know, we tout our diversity in this city, but I don't think we've really supported our diverse communities and our different, you know, ethnic and cultural communities to promote themselves. And I'd like to see the city do more of that. Now, food trucks is just one small avenue that that could happen. There are other kinds of businesses I think about. And Asia Town or Chinatown is, you know, one of the areas I'm familiar with. And so, you know, how do we promote it better? Because I think people who live in Houston don't really know about that. And yet we have some great restaurants, great businesses, great small businesses in that area that could, that, you know, could be promoted. So food trucks is another good example. Why is it hard to get them promoted in this city? I think our restaurant businesses are wonderful. And this month, as you probably know, is restaurant month. And this is a great time to go visit all of our different restaurants. Are they really that, you know, why can't we promote them as well as food trucks? There are different ways of eating, of dining, you know, and I don't see that they're in direct competition, because if I want to go support our food trucks, that's a whole different way of dining than going to our restaurants. Now, there may be some close competition, but still, going to a restaurant, going to a food truck is so different. I would like to see us give them more support and allowing them to be downtown or in the Med Center. Where they need to be is where there's a lot of foot traffic, where there's a lot of pedestrian traffic, where people can just stop and purchase or buy. You know, you're not going to necessarily take your car and go find them. But if you're going to be at the park or at some of these places where there's a lot of foot traffic, that's where they could be really popular. And I don't see that they're going to be competition to the restaurants, because restaurants are going to be located at certain places. You're going to drive there to go there to enjoy them. So I would support improving and encouraging their ability to function.
Okay. As you know, in 2001, the city, there was a charter amendment that forbade the city from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. That was passed by the voters. Times have changed.
Times have changed.
The Supreme Court, in its ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act, certainly broadened opportunities for same-sex couples. But, of course, that's federal. You know, I know there's been some talk in recent years about revisiting that charter amendment to, you know, perhaps reconsider that particular amendment. If such an amendment were to be put forward, would you support it?
I would certainly support putting that amendment up again for a vote or for review. I would have to also look at the impact of passing that amendment on the budget. But with things changing now, I think it's time for us to look at it again.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this because I ask everyone this. Who are you supporting for mayor this year?
I am still looking very hard, but I think Mayor Parker has done an outstanding job in her, 4 years to navigate the very, very tight economic times when we were, had really hard budget times. She really got the city through it, and I think she has done some really good things in trying to bring the city up, and we're, like I've always said, we're on the first of a lot of lists. What I'm saying, though, is it's easy for us to topple if we're not careful, so we need to look at the future and keep us on top. But she's done a great job in keeping us on top. She's done a good job.
Okay. And, there are multiple people running in this race for this open seat. When people go to vote in November for at-large number 3, why should they vote for you and not one of your opponents?
I hope they will vote for me because I really bring a lot of experience and understanding of the city, having, been born here, raised here, lived here all my life, raised my family here, worked here, that I can really bring a lot of leadership to this city that I think will need to steer us in the years to come, in the future. As I say, we've done so well as a city. We are on top. But that can easily topple. That can easily change looking at, some city like Detroit. So I want to look at the city in the future and prepare us for the future and keep us on top. But also I want to bring my leadership style, my ability to work with all groups, and my ability to build consensus on council to keep us steering this city ahead, and to use the good days, like now where we're seeing some revenue coming in, some increased revenue, to use it wisely, to store up our peanuts, our nuts, as you say, for the winter, for the times where they may be hard again, but to also keep the city on top and to bring everybody to the table, because I really believe that everybody's voices count and that a good government is one where we hear and we listen to everyone.
Rogene G. Kelvin, thank you very much for talking to me today.